Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to call this April 21st, 2014, Finance Committee meeting to order, the purpose of which is to review the proposed FY15 public safety budget for Newcastle County. Currently present is myself, Councilman Smalley, co-chair of the Finance Committee. We have Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Councilman Tackett. Councilman Retta is here right now. Off the top, those that I've been advised have a conflict and will not be able to attend today is Councilman Weiner, Councilwoman Diller, Councilman Hollins, Councilman Powers, Councilman Sheldon. Councilman Cartier is en route and hopes to be here before we are done.
All right, hurry up.
A little bit of work in advance. Anyone that rises to speak, I'd ask that you please identify yourself clearly for the record. In addition, this public safety, as a rule, is a very in-depth budget, quite a bit to it. So I would ask everyone, try to remain on topic. If anyone has questions regarding public safety that are not relative to the budget, I would ask that you contact either the co-chairs of public safety directly or the legislative aides to have that subject placed on the appropriate public safety agenda. With that, Council President Bullock has joined us. So who is first in the seat?
I am, sir. Good afternoon, Director Joseph Bryant Jr. First of all, let me just thank the committee for allowing us to change our day in front of you. We have an appointment sometime next week, and myself and the Colonel will be out of state. I will start off by saying...
And if I can clarify and interrupt, excuse me, I want to recognize that Councilman Bell has joined us. Ready to go.
Okay. I will start on the table of content and kind of give an overview of the order in which we're going to be presenting today. I will handle the summary for the department and the public safety administration piece. That will be followed by David Carpenter, who will address the emergency management section. Jeff Miller will take on emergency communication as well as the grant for fire departments, fire companies. Larry Tan, Chief Tan, emergency medical, and Colonel Setting, police and crossing guards.
Thank you.
If you go to page 2, it's a somewhat of an organizational chart for public safety, which consists of 633 positions, 12 over our FY14. We have 9 positions in administration, 124 in emergency medical, 408 positions in police, 86 positions in emergency communication, and 6 positions in emergency management. Page 3, it's the budget history dating back to 2008, approved up to 2014, and then 2015, a recommended budget of 87.832534, which is a 3.86 increase over FY14. Page 4, the recommended budget, public safety police represents the large lion's share of our budget, which is 62.4%. And if you look at the object levels, personnel issue represents 80.5%. 80.5% of our budget, our recommended budget. Page 5, it shows our staffing since 2008, and you will see an increase that actually took place in 2014, where we increased our personnel and paramedics by 7 and 5 additional police officers and police. Just a note, and I'm sure to come up later on, 30% reimbursement for paramedics, and the police positions are partially funded by a grant. Diversity, we have this diversity report that was provided by our HR department March of 2014. I think what I'll do is just, if it's okay, I will just allow Chief Tan to highlight what we did insofar as our diversification of efforts in the paramedic division. Page 7, budget detail. Essentially, salaries, wages, and benefit represents the majority of a 3.86 increase in our recommended budget. That represents, again, a large lion's share of our proposed budget. Page 8. Again, salaries and wages represents 2.91%, and it's based primarily on the increase of merit increases and promotions of our police officers. The increase due to the benefit rate is 51.3 for all permanent full-time employees. We'll talk a little bit more throughout regarding training. The one thing that we're going to try to do in public safety, something that we haven't done in the past, is prepare for our future succession planning. So with that, we're asking for additional funding, primarily in the administration, paramedics, and communications, to increase the amount of money set aside for advanced training for leadership and leadership development. Down in the section of supplies and equipment, because of our new police officers and new paramedics, there is a 19.48% increase. And then towards the bottom, actually it's the last piece on this page, contingency having to do with the heroin alert initiative. As you all know, I guess more specifically, our chief has really stressed the fact that we have an epidemic in our county and in our state and in this country. And essentially there are three approaches to trying to deal with this enforcement. And I think we're doing an outstanding job in that regard. We have teamed up both not internally but with other agencies in New Castle County along with federal agencies to try to combat this heroin problem.
I want to place on the record, excuse me, Councilman Cartier has joined us.
On the medical side, you'll hear from Larry Tan and his folks as to what they're trying to do in the street to really keep these folks alive. The one piece that we're not doing very much with over the past year since I've been back is prevention and education. We have a heroin alert program that was developed some 20 years ago, if not longer, very effective back then, but over the years it died off. So we want to bring that back, and the way to do that, we think, is to enhance our program through advertising, both, you know, billboards, movie theaters, TV, radio, whatever, however we can get the word out about the evils of this nasty drug. And drugs in general. We need materials for handout. We have Marie Allen, and this council recognized Ms. Allen sometime last year for our efforts with her community, heroin alert. And she needs material. She needs books. She needs handouts. She needs material to give these young kids, primarily in the middle school and high school level. We have to get to those kids to try to get them to stay away from this evil drug. We would love to put together some public service announcements that will be shown on TV, both locally and regionally. So we have a lot of ideas on how we can reach the masses, getting into schools, clubs, wherever we can get to these young folks. If I could, our Office of Community Services, they're going to put together a very detailed list of all the things that would equate to this $500,000, and I believe that they're on the schedule for sometime towards the end of the month. So if I could reserve that postpone that.
So we will, and that's what I was going to ask, so we will see a more detailed presentation, because my concern is, I'll be very honest, you know, I've heard different things. My concern is, $500,000 is a lot of money. Not that this isn't worthwhile, and it may be a drop in the bucket towards this, but I want the $500,000 spent in town.
Oh, absolutely.
In town, I mean in Delaware. I don't want to be advertising in California somewhere.
In Delaware, and more specifically in Newcastle County. That's the plan. Now, is it going to reach beyond? I would say so, because we have these young folks coming from out of town, out of state, into our county buying drugs. We have kids attending our schools in Delaware and Newcastle County in particular who live out of state. So we're trying to reach everybody that we possibly can. But our focus, when we started this program years ago, our focus was Newcastle County. And it just exploded, expanded from there. I got a call over the weekend from Elkton, the mayor of Elkton, Maryland. And they have a tremendous problem in there, according to him. And he wants our help. And we're going to provide whatever we can to him and for him to try to prevent, that spread of the drugs. Because don't think that it's just that borderline is invisible.
Okay, I look forward to the detail.
Yes.
Thank you. Councilman Cardin?
You know, referring to the heroin alert initiative,
yes.
I can tell you that I personally, beginning in this year, every community meeting that I attend, bring up this issue. And it would be very useful, I think, for members of this council, who most of whom are very active in the evenings attending committee meetings, to have some type of, if we're going to do this sort of thing, some kind of brochure that we can hand out to committee members as well. Because,
yes.
You know, I think a lot of the meetings I go to, primarily attended by adults, there's a sort of a lack of awareness. Mm-hmm. And although, you know, some meetings there is awareness, the bulk of them there's, you know, very little awareness. So
there.
Educating these folks in these community settings, which, you know, I've got one this evening I'm going to, virtually every night I'm out two or three.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a way to really, you know, give that kind of education to people who are in contact with young people regularly.
And we plan to do that. We had a news conference this morning about the drug take back, and at the end of the day, it was about heroin.
We look forward to the details relevant to the budget.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
If we go over to page 12, and that's the 2015 fee schedules. Essentially, I'm going to let the chief handle that. Chief Tan will take care of number one, the 30% reimbursement. Chief Miller will take care of the reimbursement from the state on the 911 communications. Colonel Setting will take care of police reports, police traffic fines, Westover Hills, and false alarms. And enhanced 911 report system fee, again, it will be Chief Miller. Go over to the administrative section of our department. 64.36% represents personnel costs. And in that section, there are nine positions. We're asking for an increase up to 1.409071. Page 16. Again, what I'll highlight is again training on page 16, and it will be focused more on leadership within our divisions, getting prepared for the future. There are some great schools out there, Command and Leadership School, that we have some of our folks involved in now, that's put on by West Point. There's some that's put on by Harvard and elsewhere, and we want to either send our folks to those schools or bring it to our facility. Page 17, with regards to the recommended budget, again, the object level, having to do with salaries and wages, merit increases represent the mass majority of the 2.73% that we're asking for. Again, we talked about the employee benefits, training. There's nothing on page 18. We have one vacant position in administration, and it's the police finance officer position.
That's you're, wanting, big, you're wanting back?
We don't want necessarily him back, but we want someone else back.
All right,
we're not giving up that position if that's okay. He's doing a great job elsewhere. We like him where he's at. He's not here, is he? Okay.
Too late.
Too late, I know. contractual services, pretty straightforward. And a breakdown by a breakdown of the recommended budget by office levels. And that's all I have. If there are no questions, if I could ask David Carpenter to come up and he will address the Office of Emergency Management. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Council. Dave Carpenter, Jr., the Coordinator of Emergency Management for Newcastle County. I'll start off on page 23 for the Office of Emergency Management. As our goal is to increase the disaster and response effectiveness of Newcastle County governments and its citizens, as you can see there, a couple of highlights during the year this year of the EF0 tornado that we had in Rob Scott Manor, and also one of the drills that we participated in with many responders from the community, including EMS, 911, and the local fire department there at the airport in concert with the DRBA. On page 24, we'll highlight the recommended budget request for FY15. There's a 7% increase over FY14, and the reason behind that, you'll see on the next page, or on the next two pages, with the detail is in the salaries and benefits increases. As you see, personnel costs on page 25 represents almost 75% of our budget. And I'll jump to page 26 because here you can see actually more of the full picture where the salaries and benefits are the increase of the cost. We've decreased that throughout the county budget side to accommodate the increases. And we've also balanced those costs out with our grant funding. As you see down the bottom, we have grant funding coming in the levels of that would be actually be 263 this year. We actually, or I'm sorry, 258, and the FEMA grant project should now be about 71. We've got an increase of about $10,000 just recently through the through DEMA's grant funding under the Emergency Management Program, and the PSE&G is still in discussions with DEMA on the budget. So that's last year's figure. Hopefully that will be a little bit of an increase for next year for additional costs that we're seeing. On page 27, those details are spelled out for you in the salaries and wages and where the decreases have been handled. There are no position adjustments for emergency management on page 28. And if I could spend some time highlighting some of the accomplishments this year on page 29. Again, the EOC activation we had with June 10th with the EF0 tornado, with Councilman Diller and others in support of that activation afterwards with the recovery efforts. In addition to all the agencies that initially responded, we actually had community input to the process through Home Depot employees and Boy Scout troops in the area that provided some cleanup duties and some debris removal duties the next day. In addition, the September 23rd, through the fatality situation that we ran into down in Middletown, the Middletown Police Department requested our office to come in. They are currently going through accreditation process, and we assisted them, as we do our county police department, within service training on the emergency operations plan for Newcastle County, incident command system training, and some hazmat training. And we did some tabletop exercises for their officers these past couple weeks. To highlight some of the exercises we participated in and coordinated this year, we have the full-scale multi-agency airport exercise that we had. In addition, We did a communications functional exercise, not only with Newcastle County and City of Wilmington, but State Emergency Operations Center and two adjoining County Emergency Operations Center and all the hospitals in the area, including St. Francis, the Christiana Care System, and also the AI DuPont Pediatric Hospital. That tested all forms of communication, line of radio, fax, telephone, email, and also satellite phone capability, along with amateur radio aspects. The City of Wilmington Active Shooter Tabletop Exercise is developing through into a full-scale exercise, so most of you will be somewhat participating in that this year coming up. We'll be doing a full-scale exercise sometime this summer. In addition, we took this process, adopted the policy and procedures that developed out of it, and we'll be adopting those into our evacuation plans here in the county, throughout the county buildings. We'll be conducting some other tabletop exercises, especially with our library facilities out there in the county. We just finished up a tabletop exercise with the government center, and that will be applied to some of the other facilities also. In addition, obviously a hot topic out in the community, as most of you know, over the past several weeks or past several months, is the crude oil trains moving through the county. We just finished up last Thursday night a meeting over in Newark. Went very well. With that topic being on everybody's mindset and some increased training opportunities are being put forth. In addition, the Newcastle County LEPC and the Delaware City Community Awareness and Emergency Response Group, which is the group around the chemical facilities and the other facilities in the Delaware City area, are partnering with us and DEMA to provide a crude oil train exercise coming up in this late August. Then in October, which has been in the planning stages for quite some time now, over about a year, dealing with Amtrak and SEPTA, we are planning a mass casualty incident rail exercise in October at the Fairplay Station over by Delaware Park. Some outreach events that we've had this year. We are out there just about every other weekend, if not at least twice or three times a month at different events, different speaking, safety presentations. As you can see, we've provided over about 36 events this year. It's down from last year a little bit, and that's because of the loss of the some of the interns in the AmeriCorps program that we had. Those members provided a lot of training out at the schools. We are adjusting for that, and we have partnered with some of the school districts to try to get a program into the schools. We are holding, in addition, two advanced cert trainings this year. So this is a class above and beyond what we provide four or five times a year now in the basic training. It's more hands-on practical exercises that we'll be doing. Pretty hard of hearing. Some FY 2015 goals. One of the highlights here to review with everybody, because we'll be back here at the table probably at the Land Use Committee meeting and then again at the Planning Board meeting like we did 5 years ago. It is time for us to review and revise our FEMA all-hazard mitigation plan. And this year, one of the changes that we are going to foresee is, in the past, the City of Wilmington had their own all-hazard mitigation plan, and Newcastle County had one that covered Newcastle County unincorporated area and all the rest of the 12 municipalities which signed on to that plan as their plan. This year, the City of Wilmington is going to come in underneath the county's plan, and so it'll still be a multi-jurisdictional plan, but it'll be covering all 13 municipalities within Newcastle County. Lastly, on page 32, as far as some of the challenges go for us, we will be implementing accreditation. We have started to work with the EMAP program, the Emergency Management Accreditation Program, to start a self-assessment process. There we'll morph into an assessment process, and then we will have to do some improvements on our parts with some procedures and program management aspects, because it actually looks at the county as an entire program, not just Newcastle County OEM division or section. It looks at the entire Newcastle County Emergency Management, entire Newcastle County government as a program for emergency management. One of the most important things that we're working on right now is integration of the county resources into a resource portal. In addition to that, we're looking at getting response plans into a response plan portal. We are partnering with the state on their project for school safety plans to get our county emergency management plans into a portal, and this will be one portal that all responders and 911 centers will have access to down the road. In addition to incorporating some of that program and having links to it into the CAD program, we've already met with the Division of Communications to see what the progress is on the CAD system and where that CAD system might be able to support that effort. We'll continue the program, as you see there highlighted in the picture last year. Thank you, Council, for your support on the community rating system. That's providing a nice discount to our citizens that have to pay flood insurance. We'll continue that program, and myself and John Geisling are looking at, we're part of a users group that are looking into ways we can increase the points values for the things that the county does so that we can maybe raise our rating next year or the year after that and get even a further discount. Lastly, on page 33, we have the emergency management position vacancies. Currently, the admin aid position has been requested, and that position is with the HR for the testing process for that position. If there's any specific questions on the next couple pages, which details the contractual services and our recommended budget details, I can take those now.
Thank you very much.
So any questions?
As a housekeeping measure with members of council, if we do have an established forum now, I'd like to make take a motion to approve the budget hearing minutes for 4/14/14.
Second.
So motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved.
I will turn the chair over to Chief Miller.
Good afternoon, Council. Jeff Miller, Chief of Communications. Thank you for the opportunity to present the 2015 recommended budget for the Emergency Communications Division. We'll start out with page 36. It's a good opportunity. I know all of you have been into the 911 Center, and you're very familiar with what the 911 Center looks like. Page 37, under our mission, I'd like to highlight this is the communications van operating at a working fire at the Friends School, and that we do remain responsive to all requests for fire, medical, and police services. And we don't just answer the phone and dispatch, we go out and support the responding entities in their mission as well. Next, page 38, recommended approved budget with a very modest 1.26% increase over last year at 8.726. Moving forward to page 39, recommended budget, you'll see in the pie chart there that the personnel costs are 91.7% of our overall operating cost. So again, very modest increase in our budget. The director did ask me to speak to our fee schedule. A little over $1.1 million comes from the E911 reimbursement from the 911 board. That's 50 cents per landline and 60 cents per cell phone, but that's a guaranteed cap from House Bill 283, which was House Bill 283 was introduced in the year 2000. We know the landlines have decreased since then, but we've been guaranteed that same funding all the way through. Page 40. The budget details, again, salaries, employee benefits is the largest portion. You will see training and civic, and I'll address that in a few minutes, a $10,000 increase, which is 62% over last year. Communications and utilities, we have saved $17,000 in reduction of data lines to the fire service. And then we also see that again down in our cross charges. You'll see a reduction in the IGS costs for IS. Basically, we've taken two data lines out of every firehouse, saving us just about $72,000 every year for the future. As we've transitioned to an email format, we send them the information electronically over the internet now rather than using hard phone lines. So we have cost savings there. Our recommended budget, broken down by object level on page 41. Again, 2 to 1% increase for attrition. Benefits, as the director earlier mentioned, 51.3%. Overall affects us at 1.27%. But training and civic affairs, we're making an investment in training our successors. We're currently sending our management, administrative staff level, and our supervisory level to the New Jersey State Police Chief's Command and Leadership School, which is the West Point Command and Leadership. That's being held on site in our building, and thanks to the support of the Chief of Police, Colonel Setting, we've been welcomed into that class, and we're supporting that for our future leaders. Communications and utilities, modest increase there as well. But again, we show a $72,000 reduction from our IS cross charges for reduction of the dependency on the data landlines. Our next page is page 42. Position adjustments, we have none presented for fiscal 15. And if I may, on page 43, just a few of our accomplishments, I'd like to highlight that we still maintain our accreditation with the National Academy of Emergency Dispatch with a 98.8% overall compliance rating. It's one of the highest in the country. We've also supported our staff and our employees to attend the APCO, Association of Professional Communication Officials. I'm the president of the Mideastern chapter. We do an all-day training event and then an awards event, which was just held in Kent Island, Maryland. So we use some of our training money to get our employees there as well. Other accomplishments, you heard me about the reduction in the dependency of the data lines, our computer-aided dispatch system. We gave out about a $58,000 tune-up in last year's budget, and that resulted in the $72,000 savings in disconnecting the data rates. During fiscal 14, six of our eight, and as the time this was published, six of our eight public safety operator positions have been filled. I'm happy to say that they're all filled now, the eight new positions, and that puts us in good shape to move forward with our career development process and staffing more in accordance to the busy time of days, and I have a chart that will highlight that in just a few minutes. Moving on to page 44, our communication division goals and challenges. Just to enable to continue our 24/365 support, address our systems and our technologies, and enable our existing 911 systems to continue to deliver the service they deliver today, and look for the improvements of next generation 911 and the capabilities that will be made available to us in the very near future. Achieve 100% staffing, which we are coming close to at this point. Institute a power shift, focusing our people at the busy times of day. Technology improvements, a little further down the page there. The implementation of the New World CAD system. We're still slated to go live with that somewhere between November and December of this year. By signing on board to the state-funded CAD system, it's funded through the E911 board. That will relinquish our responsibility of maintenance over the next 5 years because it's part of the package. So for 5 years, we'll have a significant savings as well once we disconnect with our current Northrop Grumman product, just in maintenance. Implementation of First Watch, it's a software that actually does real-time reporting for us in the background. It monitors many of the software systems that we use, including our CAD system, our EPD, which is our emergency police protocol, our emergency medical, and our emergency fire. And depending on the way questions are being answered, it can begin to predict certain areas throughout Newcastle County that might be problematic, not only for crime, but for it could begin to trend, the flu is beginning to set in. So that's an implementation we're looking to develop here in 2015. And continue to improve the field responders technology and hardware as we move along with the new CAD system. We see our challenges still being the workload and the stress levels. We hope that the better assigning people to the busier time of days will help reduce that as well. Page 45, our vacancies. We currently have two, and we actually telecommunication training officer coordinator. Next week, we will have final selection interviews, so that will be filled, and that will generate a vacancy from within the ranks. And our assistant platoon leader from police is police supervisor. We will probably be making that appointment next week, so that will create an additional vacancy. Contractual service detail on page 46. Most of our contractual services are equipment maintenance, radio communications, service contracts, both for Recom Fire Board and the 911 call operators themselves, equating to about $593,000 to keep our systems maintained and running. Recommended budget under object level, again on page 47. Employee and benefits is almost 8 of the 8.7. Then the rest is broken down into individual categories if there's any questions there. Okay. We have a few charts for you on page 48. One is the total 911 call count over the calendar year in the public safety operators section, call operators, and then the fire board as well, totaling 449,233 911 calls for service into our center last year, just slightly up below the 455 for the year before.
Mr. Chair.
County Recorder.
I really like the graphic presentation of, you know, call history and volume. And my question is, the EMS system that comes from the fires, volunteer fire companies, that is dispatched through the fire board?
Yes.
911 calls?
Yes.
Okay.
The next one down is how often do we meet our answering all 911 calls within 10 seconds or less. You'll see that it's in a much better percentage this time at 78%. I'm sorry, less at 78%. And we equate that to having 8 people in training at one time and their CTOs. A little bit slower processing phone calls, but we expect to see that pick up in fiscal 15. As well as the way we're going to redesign the way we answer our phone calls. That'll take me to the next chart on page 39. At the top of the page is our annual call volume. Over the past 3 years, obviously the data shows that our busiest time of day is between 10 a.m. and 10 p.m., and that's when we need to have our largest workforce. So our 8 new call operator positions from fiscal 14 in fiscal 15 will be assigned to 2 additional shifts, and they will make up 4 to 5 additional people on each shift between those time frames of the busiest times. And we expect to see ourselves answering our calls within the 90 percentile very quickly. Total New Castle County fire and EMS incidents, including City of Wilmington incidents, is 131,785 for 2013. It's a slight increase over 2012. And the very last page, page 50, is police CAD incidents created by New Castle County 911 for all the agencies that we represent through 911. There's 321,300, just shy of last year's 327.
Yes, the previous chart, 911 fire and EMS incidents, 2011-2012, fairly significant jump in volume. I mean, what do you attribute that to?
It's about 1,000 calls a month. I would have to specifically look for what caused the increase. I do know that in 2012 we had about 3 larger storms that we did in the fiscal or in the process of 2013.
Okay.
I had to physically look at it.
Weather related, perhaps.
Could be.
I would also venture that that's when the cell phone company started going on unlimited minutes.
Okay.
The director asked me what I contribute the drop in police calls to, and I would have to say I attributed to the TAPS program. We have been monitoring throughout all of last year in the same month-to-month comparison, and I'm not going to steal the Colonel's thunder, but when you reduce crime, as this police department has over the past year, in the percentage that they have, you're going to see an impact on the 911 center. And we have seen a reduction in our requests for 911 calls. And that's what we attribute to.
Okay.
That's all I have for communications, if anyone has any other.
Thank you very much.
Would you like me to skip to page 117 and do the fire department grant funding right now?
As long as you're there.
Okay. So the grant and aid to the fire companies is being presented on page 118 with no percentage increase over 2014, $3,879,163. Page 119 shows the communications and utilities at $13,500, fixed charges at 3.8, and the internal cross charges, which are the motor, I want to say motor lines, the CDMA, the cell phone lines for the mobile dispatch terminals that are in all the BLS units. We're paying $26,599 for that year. And that takes us to page 123. And let's just break down by companies based on their fire stations, ambulance provisions, and rescue, and then if they have a rescue boat or not. The allocations for those. At the very bottom, underneath subtotal, you'll see special operations. That's $27,600. That goes towards high-angle rescue and any of the other special operations that the fire service supports together. Communication support and red phones. They're the red phones that are on the outside of the fire departments, available to the public at $13,500. And again, I had highlighted the 26.5 for the CDMA or the BLS MDT charges for the cell phone lines. And that's all I have.
Well, I think it would be prudent to return to page 120 just so you can cap for us the fixed charges, as this was an issue in last year's budget.
Fixed charges, $225 to the City of Wilmington Fire Department. Yes, that was...
been on the record. I went over that, and that was an issue during the budget discussions last year.
Okay.
It's important that we get the, in there.
Okay.
Back up to you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chairman, members of council, Larry Tan, Chief of Emergency Medical Services. I'm sure that the members of council are very familiar with the mission of the Newcastle County Paramedic Service. And that mission in calendar year 2013 included 30,694 incidents. And if you were to ask us, well, what are the three biggest patient complaints that we receive? Number one is difficulty breathing. Number two is that they're in an altered mental status, they're not coherent. Number three would be cardiac problems. If you're looking for the four leading causes for people injured that result in a paramedic response, number one continues to be falls, number two, motor vehicle crashes, number three is assaults, and number four are pedestrian incidents, pedestrians struck by some type of a vehicle. If you look on page 53, the last two fiscal years, the FY14 approved represented a 7% increase, and as you will likely recall, we were actually restoring previously frozen positions. So that was the biggest reason for that. And for this year, the two major reasons for a proposed 5.8% increase is number one, this, the continuation of the seven additional positions that were previously authorized by council in January of this year. And number two is the contractual services cost for the training program up at Good Fellowship Training Institute, which was authorized by council in a resolution back, I believe it was in December of 2013, if I'm not mistaken. But we'll get into the further details here. If you look on page 54, 85, almost 86% of our operating budget are personnel costs. So, again, a majority of the cost for delivery of paramedic services is the investment in the personnel. As the director mentioned earlier, the entire EMS division operating budget is eligible for 30% state reimbursement under the Statewide Paramedic Services Act. That translates, as was pointed out at the beginning of this proposal, into about a $4.697 million reimbursement that the county receives on a quarterly basis for paramedic service expenditures. If you look on page 55, that's kind of the main object levels, how it breaks down. And to get into a little bit more detail on page 56, Again, the increase in salary and wages, primarily the 7 new paramedic positions that are being continued from the ordinance from the current fiscal year. The additional training funding, again, we're looking at really significant issues that we've had in the past with training and professional development. The EMS division budget was extremely limited in being able to send people to outside training opportunities, much less leadership development. So we're looking at the ability to not only hone the clinical skills of our field personnel, but also help prepare frontline supervision and leadership development. And some of the examples of the courses that we try to send people to include a difficult airway course, a pediatric transport skills course. We've tried to send people to the National Fire Academy for a specific management of EMS course. And we actually have two supervisors that are currently enrolled and finishing up the West Point Command and Leadership course. And to kind of put in perspective the difficulty in trying to parse out a very limited budget, sending two people to the West Point Command and Leadership course was almost 50% of our entire annual budget for training of travel and civic. So while this may look like a 392% increase, it's really, when you look at the numbers themselves, we were dealing with a very low number to begin with for a division our size. Contractual services. Again, two major sources of increase. One, the education and training cost for the enrollment of the paramedic class at the Good Fellowship Training Institute. The other is lease payments at two of the local fire companies for paramedic units that are based in fire companies. This was something that actually developed at the beginning of the current fiscal year. So it was something that we had not proposed in our current fiscal year and actually came about after the beginning of the fiscal year. We're also, just at the bottom, in looking at other intergovernmental service costs, we are proposing to add an additional paramedic vehicle to our fleet in anticipation of the paramedic class graduating and being able to establish an additional power shift unit. So we're trying to prepare for that unit to be fully deployed by adding the cost of an additional vehicle in the fleet.
I have one question. I apologize for not recalling if we did the numbers previously. I understand the efficiency of the paramedic training classes and all we're doing now. What were we paying Del Tech? And I apologize, I should have gone back and referenced one to the other. It's just...
For the 22 months, it would be $6,700 in tuition, $1,000 in books.
Okay.
Per student.
So roughly the total cost for a student in a 22-month program was about
$7,700 plus
salary and benefits. So because we're doing this in a reduced time frame, we're saving probably about
on the back end.
Exactly, we're saving about 44% of the total cost. Okay. When you factor in the fact that salary and benefits are going to be in a roughly a 12-month program versus a 22-month.
Now they'll be getting it for being on the street doing the job rather than the classroom. I mean,
sure, absolutely.
Getting more bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm. We anticipate the ability to get them out in the field faster, which will cut down on the need for overtime staffing to fill vacancies and maintain current operating levels. So we're looking forward to the ability to put them in the field.
I'm just curious about the difference. Councilman Carter.
And I just want to reference and thank the administration for working with our Brandywine Fire Company at my district, which now has a small lease payment for sharing space with the paramedic unit, and they were doing that for a lot of years without any compensation for that. And I'm glad we were able to help them out, and Cranston Heights as well. I don't know Cranston Heights as well, but I'm familiar with Brandywine very well.
If you look on page 58, really the major new programs, if you will, the fact that we posted and recruited for the paramedic class of 2014 and 2015. As we said when we came before council in December to talk about the 7 additional positions, really it will also be one of the greatest accomplishments of the current fiscal year. The fact that in a very short period of time, we were able to get probably more applicants than we've ever seen in a longer posting, and have such a broad outreach to all sectors of the community. Certainly one of the biggest secondary accomplishments has been the fact that the 16 people that are in paramedic training represent probably some of the greatest diversity that we've had in a paramedic class. They actually attended the police graduation last week. I know Councilman Bell had a chance to see the group, but they're actually starting today the first next phase of training, which is paramedic-specific level training. So we're pleased to see that they're progressing. We also have completed the purchase and deployment of the next generation monitor defibrillator devices, which were actually funded under the capital program, but this is probably the most used piece of equipment that's on a paramedic vehicle. So we've been able to actually obtain the new devices. We've deployed them out in the field. We're wirelessly transferring the data that that these monitoring devices are collecting into a repository where we can evaluate from a quality improvement point the patient care. And it's been a significant improvement in the quality of devices that the paramedics are using. We are well on our way to resolving EMS staffing. And as you look at on page 59, the area that we talked about, reduced services, really from a reduced service, it means that we're maintaining a focus on our operational staffing. We've taken a very conservative approach to doing public outreach activities. We'll do them with on-duty units where we can. But even in that conservative approach, just to kind of put in perspective, last year, the Newcastle County paramedics did 63 CPR courses and trained and recertified over 1,100 people in CPR. We provided 5 continuing education programs to 138 basic life support or volunteer fire service personnel. And we did 24 EMS careers presentations to over 654 students regarding EMS careers. So we're hopeful as we resolve our EMS staffing within the EMS division that we'll be able to make an investment in some of the prevention activities and maybe improve our community outreach on a much more formal basis. But even though we've got it down as a reduced service, we're still actively engaged, maybe not to the level that we'd like to see, but we're still doing a lot of activity to reach out to the public. As I said earlier, significant accomplishments in the current fiscal year. The paramedic class is probably our number one accomplishment. Some of you may have had the opportunity to attend the second annual Sudden Cardiac Arrest Survivors Reunion in March of 2014. The annual Cardiac Arrest Survivors Reunion gives us an opportunity to recognize all of the people, including bystanders, police officers, firefighters, EMTs, and paramedics that were involved in a case that resulted in a patient being successfully revived in the field and discharged from the hospital with no neurological deficits whatsoever. And in many cases, we actually have those patients that are returning to meet the people that were involved in providing their care. Interesting, this year, virtually all of the patients that joined us at the front of the room leaned over as they were listening to their case and said they had never had anybody explain all of the events that occurred on that day. It was the first time they had heard what exactly had taken place. But it's an event that we've now done for 2 consecutive years. It seems to be gathering momentum, and we're hoping to continue and make it an annual event. We've also given the assistance of council with our current fiscal year budget in restoring previously unfunded positions, have probably accomplished some of the largest volume of promotions within the EMS division that I've seen in 32 plus years. We promoted over 11 people in supervisory and staff positions, and for the first time in 10 years, we have all of our supervisory and staff positions that are currently filled within the EMS division. And I want to thank the members of council and certainly the executive for their support in supporting the paramedic service. Our goals for FY15, we are obviously want to continue the investment in the paramedic class of 2014. We've done a yeoman's job of getting them in. We've certainly gotten them through the first phase of training. We're going to continue to mentor them and get them to graduate and become nationally registered and Delaware certified paramedics. We're continuing to work with the Emergency Communications Division to replace all of our 800 megahertz portable and mobile radios that are used by the paramedics. And as I said earlier, we want to improve professional development opportunities within the EMS division, not only for field staff, but also for supervision and leadership. And obviously, we want to continue to fulfill the requirements for our national accreditation. We're extremely proud of the fact that we're the only EMS agency in Delaware to be nationally accredited. We recently renewed our accreditation for a full three-year term. We're going to continue to stay with that. It shows a wise investment and public value in the service that we provide. We're going to look at other options for technology. You know, one of the things that we are exploring with the communications division is the potential to implement the PulsePoint application. That PulsePoint is a smartphone app that, if it's connected to the dispatch computer, can notify people in the immediate area if there's a CPR case. And when we look at the type of suburban demographics that we have, it's quite possible that somebody in the neighborhood, the first time they find out their neighbor is having a problem is when all of the ambulances and the fire trucks pull up. But if with the smartphone app, the potential is that they could immediately be notified of an incident, and if their CPR trained, could be helping provide bystander CPR and further increase the survival rates in New Castle County. So that's something that we're actively exploring. If you look on page 64 at some of the challenges and risks, and you know, one of the things that we've seen in the Department of Public Safety is that by eliminating the silos within the departments and having the Department of Public Safety performing as a unified group, we are all looking at particular community problems from different disciplinary aspects, but collectively on how we solve things. And one of the interesting initiatives that was brought up earlier was the Heroin Alert Program. And we look at that as an investment in prevention activities. The New Castle County paramedics responded to 955 overdose incidents in calendar year 2013, which equates and averages out to over three a day. If you think about the cost of those incidents, the processing the 911 call, the EMS system response, and the downstream healthcare costs once you transport people to a hospital, the police response, the fire department and the ambulance response, the risk to EMS. One of the things that we're seeing is, on a national scale, there's an increased prevalence of violence against EMS providers. And unfortunately, we're seeing that in New Castle County. We are having cases where paramedics are actually being assaulted by patients. It actually prompted us to help and support an amendment to the offensive touching portion of the Delaware Code to increase the misdemeanor status if you offensively touch a paramedic during the performance of their duties. So in every case of addiction or substance abuse that could be prevented, you improve the quality of life, not only for the individual that you've prevented from going into substance abuse, but of the neighbors and of the other people that would be affected. You decrease the cost of services by not requiring the EMS response, the fire department response, the public health response, if you will. And you can decrease the downstream healthcare costs as well. So I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, we're looking at some of these problems. Heroin is certainly one of them from a multidisciplinary approach. It's a community problem. It's certainly a law enforcement issue. It's a public health issue. And it's a quality of life issue in our community. It's one of the reasons why the New Castle County paramedics continue to be involved in the Heroin Alert Program and would love to see it supported so that we can further develop it. If you look on page 65, just from a historical perspective, this is probably the first time that that page of vacancies for the EMS division is as short as it is. I usually am here with 5, 6, 7, sometimes more vacancies. So we're actually doing very well. We did have one vacancy that just occurred this weekend with the retirement of a paramedic who was at age 62, had over 26 years service with the county, and he has retired. So that's another vacancy that's just more recent. But again, I think the plus is the overfill that you allowed us in the academy is helping us to accommodate that. In looking at page 66 at the contractual services details, again, the major areas have been the leases for paramedic stations and the professional services for the Good Fellowship tuition for the paramedic class. So if you look on page 67 at the total recommended budget where it breaks it down by office level 3, we're looking at a proposed budget of about $15.5 million for EMS. In the last section, some of the illustrations, On page 68, an illustration of the actual call volume for the Newcastle County paramedics that shows some of the clusters. On page 69, we said pedestrian incidents were the number four leading cause of paramedic level response to injuries. That gives you a depiction of where those pedestrian incidents occurred in calendar year 2013. We have an illustration of the paramedic incidents by fire company district and an actual depiction of the shooting incidents in calendar year 2013 that involved the Newcastle County paramedic response. And sir, I'd be happy to respond to any questions that you or the members would have.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Council. Colonel Elmer Setting, Chief of Police, Newcastle County. I'm last, but I'm also the most expensive. These guys come up here to solve the target. In regards to page 73, our mission, it's abundantly clear that we recognize our mission is to improve the quality of life and to keep our citizens safe, and I think we've taken some pretty big leaps in that direction in the last 15 months and open up just by reiterating, while I knock on wood, that we have not had a single homicide in any of our TAPS areas in 15 months. That's pretty clear evidence that something's working. These are the areas where we typically have homicides, drugs on drugs homicides. We've had zero. If you go to page 74, you can see that the lion's share of my request is our salaries and our benefits. They're extremely expensive. The intergovernment costs are listed there, the contractual services are listed there, but again, 82.47% of my budget is just our pay and benefits. In regards to our overtime, our training, and a lot of our equipment, we secure grant funding at the local, state, and federal level. We have been very, very successful with the help of our grant writer, Lori Kane, and by implementing a grant captain, if you will. She's out there every day finding us money. It's been very important because, as I said, without it, the training and the amount of money that we would need for equipment and all of the TAPS overtimes would have to come from, well, would have to come from the general fund. That's not good. So if you skip over to 76 and you skip down to the bottom, you'll see the request for the increase of 3.29% to the sum of $2,064,725. Some of those increases, I just want to tell you, are coming from the amount of money that we have to spend on undercover vehicles. You know, it was there was a time where we had six or seven undercover vehicles, and that was effective for running surveillance out of the criminal investigations unit or running drug operations with all the mobile enforcement teams out in areas where they also have to have UC vehicles. And with SIS, the Special Investigations Section, as well as the Drug Control Unit being larger than it ever has been before, we have a lot more undercover cars, and there's been an increase requested there and some other areas as well. If there's any questions on the increase, I can try and tackle it. 77 is a rundown on, again, the wages, the employee benefits, the $23,439 for training and civic affairs, communications and utilities, materials and supplies, contractual services, equipment replacement, and IGS costs. The other thing that's really getting expensive, and it seems not to be going in reverse, is ammunition. Just our required training by Council on Police Training, we have to qualify at the range X amount of times a year. The price of ammunition is just skyrocketing. The five police officers that you see on page 78, is the result of a federal grant that we went after, and council was good enough to sanction us, knowing that they had to pay for part of those police officers. They're only, Matt, what did the federal government pick up? 35% now?
I want to say it's 35-40%. I'll have to confirm that.
It used to be 50, obviously, now it's less. And that, unfortunately, I think that's going to continue to happen. So that's why we only went for five officers, putting our authorized grant at 375. But, you know, when we had a review a couple of years back prior to the housing collapse, internal and external review of the agency, the size of our jurisprudence and the amount of complaints that we respond to, about 400,000 911 calls a year, it was recommended that we hire 117 police officers. That happened. So we've got to do better with what we've got. And I think that this programs that we have implemented are doing just that. On 79, there are some significant accomplishments, as well as technology improvements. Again, most of this is grants that we've written and gone after and have won. Some have been other areas. Inside the county, funding has been made available for our technology improvements. TAPS is a very effective program, but the best software out there is the one that's being used in Florida, in Tampa in particular. And we would like to have that software down the road here. We do have it out for bid. Archangel was another very important piece of equipment. As you can see, that we've had significant reductions in accidents to our vehicles, which means significant reductions in lawsuits. And as we were assuming this time last year, was that the officers were trying to use the mobile computers while driving. Archangel shuts that keyboard off, makes it inert at about 20 miles an hour. Again, there's some other technology that's listed on here that is now in place in the patrol division, Omega Crime View dashboard, a simple computer program software, if you will, that's doing months and months of looking for a particular method of operandi for a criminal, looking for a particular address, looking for a particular group that's been let out of prison. It's doing all for you in minutes versus going through records by hand or going through files, even using the search engines that are built inside law enforcement. This is cutting down the time on all of that. So if you have a person who has a history of using heroin, he has a history of property crime, and he lives in a particular area, and we get 15 burglaries around there, this will actually extrapolate if all the methods, all of his MOs meet all of those burglaries, or it rules them out on certain ones. So it's a lot of work being done in a short amount of time.
We have used grants in the police budget to purchase the license plate reading equipment. Recently, I've started to see a trend in license plates being flipped upside down. Will it still read those?
No.
It's a recent trend I've started. I must have seen a half a dozen of them in the last 2 days, all Delaware tags where they're mounting them upside down now.
Hey, this is difficult because this fan is blowing right in my ear. I can almost hear you, Councilman.
Turn it off because I'm
pull
freezing.
Pull the plug, turn it off. All right.
So, if I understand you right, you're seeing an increase of tags flipped over?
Yeah, Delaware tags being turned upside down, fully mounted, but they're mounting them upside down.
They probably think they're sidestepping the title by flipping it over, but it's illegal.
But no, I just didn't know if the reader, but it won't read them, right?
It won't read them. And people are starting to realize that not only are the ALPRs out on the cars, they're out on our, when we put a speed sign out, every car that goes by there now is being picked up by the ALPR. And so you're seeing guys that are definitely trying to not get their tags read because they have just as an advanced communication system as we do. So they're telling each other, how did you get caught? And so, well,
I'm just curious because we've spent money on these cameras, and I was just wondering. And so state law does require it to be mounted in the appropriate.
Without having the title in front of me.
Well, I have to take a look at that. Because if not, we need to address that so we can start popping them on that as well.
Major.
I'm sorry.
Sir, major matching, the title does require to be displayed.
Okay. Again, I don't want to go copy, but we are
You're
spending...
You're also an easy target for it enforcement in the budget. If it's upside down. I personally have never seen that, but we'll certainly keep an eye out for it.
Well, you don't want to ride with me to see it. It's too unsafe, so just... But yeah, I've seen a half a dozen in the last 2 days, just all of a sudden.
Well, anybody doing that's going to, I mean, it's just going to be a red flag. They're going to get pulled over by any officer that's
out there.
That's
what I thought,
And no, almost no doubt be going to be given a ticket.
I was curious if the camera, you know,
it can't read them upside down, unfortunately. We have some technology goals. I talked a little bit about it, you know, to take the TAPS program to the next level. We are looking at software piece that's out there, hardware and software piece that's out there, in particular a crime fighting platform that will enhance our ability to indicate where crime is going to occur. I mean, right now we are doing pretty good with that, but that is all technology that was canned on the shelf. I mean, we were using what we had. Mm-hmm. The truth is there's been quite a few improvements out there in the law enforcement world. Other agencies are now, you know, jumping on this bandwagon because, again, in the old days it was, we need 100 more cops. So they're not coming. So everybody's trying to figure out a better way to police. And some of the companies that are having breakthroughs with this software are really impressive, and it does even more than what we can do right now. And it will also reduce some of the workload on the crime analysis folks that we have in there. Chief Miller spoke about the CAD improvement, and that's going to change so much when all three major agencies in Delaware are using the same CAD. When we're all using New World, it's going to make things easy, more searchable. All this stuff becomes more important, the technology, and I harp on it because the criminals, the victims, and the witnesses are not cooperative. I'll say that again for you. The victims, who shot you? I'm not telling you. The witnesses, who shot him? I don't know. And of course, the criminals.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, are not helpful. So this technology is critical to the future of policing. We are leaning towards tablets to replace the laptop computers. That's more of a state problem. We've got to get them up to speed. You know, laptops were the, you know, best thing going a couple of years back, but the truth is a tablet is more appropriate as far as the advancement in technology and what we do with them. So we're hoping that is something that we can get the state moving on as they fund that. Continue to pilot the wearable cameras, and as everyone knows, we've been trying to get our website straightened out. It was poorly built there for quite a while, but we are doing much better in that regard. People are trying to log on and apply for the position of police officer or paramedic, and the computer's throwing you out. And there just wasn't a lot of good information or links.
So it's not just me?
No.
Okay.
We're fixing it, sir.
So I was the only one being thrown out.
The significant accomplishments. I'm sorry, sir.
Okay.
You're working on page 80 still.
I'm on 81 now, sir.
All right. Just going back to page 80.
Okay.
So the aging police fleet. What type of vehicles do you think the solution for the patrol car is going to be, you know, with the rear-wheel drive sedan now, you know, completely out of production?
It is completely out of production. We have switched to the Tahoe, and okay. The Tahoe, inside of our fleet for medics, there's quite a few Tahoes, and so they're already past proven reliable. And when you go down to Dover and put the Tahoe that we're using on the EVOC course, the emergency vehicle course, it's using less fuel than Crown Victoria. It's about $1,000 difference from buying an Explorer, and the Explorer just doesn't have the same room or capabilities. And as a matter of fact, you're actually running the heck out of that engine trying to get it up to about 3,500 RPMs, trying to get that six-cylinder Ford out in front of traffic. You're just going to stand on the gas with both feet. With this Tahoe, you know, you're at 3,500 RPMs and you're just in an instant. And so far, like I said, all we've seen is a decrease in gas. We have 40 in the fleet now. We have 40 coming in the next order. But more importantly, the real savings is the Taurus, the vehicle that we're using to replace the vehicles inside, are the six-cylinder all-wheel drive Tauruses, which, by the way, you know, we didn't know how we were going to do with those smaller police cars, smaller engines, all that stuff. They've gotten straight A's. They went through the snow beautifully over the winter. Everyone says that they're very good at, for what they need. In, again, inside unit, special operations, criminal investigations. Mm-hmm. It's not a vehicle for patrol. Once you put the cage inside that Taurus, I can't put you in the back seat. And I probably can't put you in the front seat. We've got officers your size and bigger. So just well fed. But there's no way to put them in that Taurus. Not for 10 hours.
I'm not sure about you, Councilman Curry, but Councilman Bell, you're in trouble.
So we're leaning towards the Tahoe. It is the right vehicle. The good news with the Tahoe for next year, so this past year we had to pick between 4x4s and we had to pick between Pursuit rated. Chevy wants back into the police market in a big way, so they're making next year model all 4x4s and Pursuit rated. So you don't have to choose anymore. It's no longer picking one.
Okay.
Anything else there? So page 81. And I'm not just going to go through this and read everything that's on there. Obviously, we have been working very hard to do back-to-back police academies to try and compensate for the attrition rate. We just graduated an academy last Thursday night, and we have another one going in August, and we hope to overhire by a couple, whatever positions we can trade in, to try and compensate for the attrition rate. I was notified this morning at the police staff meeting that one of our tenured experienced sergeants is being hired by the AG's office. This is becoming very common. The AG's office, the other municipalities in Delaware, the Capitol PD, the hospitals, they're picking up county police because they're getting trained investigators that have a great work ethic on the cheap. And these guys are all eligible for retirement. Unfortunately, it's one of the things we're facing is that there's somewhere around 54 officers eligible for retirement right now as we speak. And that includes probably half your command staff. So as the job market continues to harden for law enforcement, we continue to suffer attrition rates. Any questions on 81? Page 82, I won't go through all of the goals as they're there for you to look at, and I'll answer any questions. But I will tell you that we have moved into our new property crime initiative. We realize that we cannot take any additional resources out of the patrol division without straining our ability to answer 911 calls. So we went down to the patrol. We identified folks that are interested in property crime. We gave them a designator as property crime specialist. We worked with RECOM, and they have, as always, they've been a great help to us, so that they can look at property crime, deploy a property crime specialist, rather than let it pen. We have to take property crime more seriously. It's one of the number one crimes and number one concerns in Newcastle County. But we weren't doing very well at it. The property crime tends to pen behind all the other 911 calls. And once you leave the police academy, unless you go into the detective division, you're never given any additional training on burglaries. Well, these property crime specialists have a weekly meeting with our criminal division. They're given additional training, better equipment. And just since the foot of the new year, we have a 27% increase in fingerprint hits on all burglaries, which means we're making arrests. Now, very common, it's not common to get property back, I won't lie to you. But making an arrest and getting restitution and giving the insurance company something to go off of is a step in the right direction. The harder we make it for people to commit property crime in Newcastle County, the harder we make it on the heroin trade in Delaware. And I'll segue into the heroin while I'm on it. You know, just to piggyback off the director here, you know, I know that the $500,000 is a lot of money, but I will say, in short, I have a heroin map that we put up every Tuesday in TAPS right now. We've got 13 dead this year to date. 13 dead this year to date. We may not be able to save a lot of these folks. There's not a lot of opportunity for rehabilitation out there. At some point, and I think we may be at that point, people are starting to admit we've built a bad model because they're not being rehabbed. Two of the 13 that died were out of prison for less than 24 hours. So they lost their ability to take their shot of heroin. They lost their tolerance, and they're dying. Some people very coldly say, well, you know, if that's their choice, what are we going to do? We have to save the next generation. That's what the $500,000 is about. $500,000 isn't going to do anything against where we're at with heroin right now. We've already upped our enforcement efforts. We have taken a record amount of heroin off the streets. The 13,530 bags that we took out of Silver Springs 3 weeks ago is the largest heroin seizure in the state ever, including the feds. So anybody that's telling you we don't have a problem, they're lying to you. So the $500,000 is about education. Today we had a recovering man recovering young person at the press conference this morning, and he talked about how it was so simple to start taking pills out of dad's medicine cabinet, grandpa's medicine cabinet, in fact, and how he just slipped right down the road of heroin and barely was able to save his life. And I've talked to several people like that recently, and I can tell you as a law enforcement officer that jail's not the answer. That's not, doesn't seem to be helping at all, in my opinion. So we are paying, the feds are paying 45% for 3 years for those five new officers. Going back a little bit, I apologize.
Councilor Currier.
Yes, talking about the last point on page 82, at your goals for 2015. And just to stress, you know, and I'll continue to stress this, while we're facing, you know, possibilities for continuing attrition through retirement, people going on to other careers in law enforcement in various agencies, you know, we do have a increasing supply of people coming out of military downscaling who could easily qualify and get involved in our county police. And they could also get involved in our EMS. So I want to just continue to stress that creating a pathway for folks to integrate into our public safety function coming out of military careers that transfer pretty well is a good strategy to get the replacement people we need.
I happen to agree. We were just down in Quantico, sir, and we've literally been driving up to the gate to say, hi, can we come in? And they've been letting us. So we're down there with our Tahoes, giving out literature, putting up our videos, and we're getting a significant increase in interest. Captain O'Sullivan was just giving me a briefing this morning. The numbers are impressive. I think this next go around, you will see some serious diversity. And I personally believe the military is the answer. I came right out of the Navy onto the police department, and I do agree it's a simple transition.
Chief Tan or Director Bratton?
Larry Tan, Chief of BMS. Just as a follow-up, a part of our outreach included reaching out to the military community. We actually went down to the Dover Air Force Base to the Family Readiness Center, recruited from them. They actually included our recruitment in their transition program for military personnel that are exiting back out in the civilian community. And 40% of our paramedic class can claim veteran status.
Good. That's great.
Thank you. Can I go back to the heroin for just 1 second?
Yes, ma'am.
Understanding that we're going to hear more about this program and how you're going to do it. I mean, years ago we had the DARE program within the schools through the state police, and that the schools are their jurisdiction. So if you could, what I would like to see, what I would like to see is something as to how you think you're getting to this age group, since the schools aren't ours unless we're, you know, going to have some contract within the schools that we can go in.
Well, the schools are unique, but back to the director's point, the only thing you can do is start, first off, being honest about heroin, how prevalent it is, now down to about $3 a bag. But the people that are running the schools are not necessarily being completely realistic. When we offer the heroin alert program, it's by invitation. We don't have to have any type of secured documents, or all we need to be is invited in. But here's the problem. The schools are saying we don't have a problem. And this is what we're up against. We have this great program, we have this great resource, and we're about to improve upon it. But we have to get the schools to understand, showing your kids this program, and we're going to be adding in the other drugs that we're worried about that are going to follow heroin, including methamphetamine, into the program. The parents have to understand, what did the young man say this morning? He wishes parents knew what the signs were of how you go from oxycodone to heroin. He said if the medicine wasn't sitting in the medicine cabinet, he wasn't blaming anybody. He was just explaining, you know, his parents knew the signs. So it has to be a huge push I'll repeat the directory. It's got to be on bulletin boards. It has to be on commercials. It has to be in the movie theaters. We have to get the message out there because the councilman said you're going out to the public and they're saying, what heroin? I was in Philadelphia on a TV talk show about the heroin, and the guy says, where's the heroin coming from? He said, Philadelphia. Why are you shocked?
Wait, but I think, you know, what I would like to see, and I don't know if anybody else would, is how you're getting to that age group. I mean, understanding that the parents don't know the signs. Been there, did not know the signs. I agree to that. But, you know, it's the kids and the parents. So I guess what I need to see is how you believe you're getting to the kids.
I'm going to defer to the Director of Public Safety.
I'll go back and say, Director Bryan, we can get into the schools because of paramedics.
Okay, and I don't need this now, but when you do your presentation.
Sure. And you know, I'm not sure how we're going to measure the effectiveness. All we can do is put it out there, and not just the kids, and we've done this already. We'll do meetings at nighttime, like up at the school up in Hocassin, but we want the parents to come as well. When we went to the Christiana School District, we met with the superintendent. They have a thing called Parent Academy, Parent University. We met with just the parents. We want them to see this and then get to the children. The schools are great, not so much the administration, but the nurses. They have an association, and we're able to go through them to get into the schools. So we're getting into the schools. And because of our relationship with the Delaware State Police, we're not going to have any issues in getting into any school in New Castle County. And that's been proven. The key is, and I think it's going to be, and I've been thinking about this all day as a result of our meeting this morning, how do you measure the effectiveness? How do you know that you're getting through to these kids? I don't know. But we're going to keep trying until we see positive results. Because right now, it's, as I think Larry said, 3 overdoses per...
Over 3.
That's a lot. And we have to cut that down tremendously. And it's not just in the inner cities. It's in the private schools. It's in the charter schools. It's in the better developments, the residential areas in New Castle County. So our and we'll talk more about it. I think we're going to be here on the 30th. But how are we going to try to reach out to as many people in this county as possible to get the word out there? If you don't think there is, that's because your head is buried in the sand, to be perfectly honest. There is no way in the world you cannot know that we have a heroin problem in this county and in this country. So, thank you.
So if you're on page 83 with me, we faced a couple of challenges that we have kind of already talked about. We do have some folks that are eligible for retirement, 52, 51 now. One of them retired this morning. So, and we are seeing, you know, and I think we will for some time, cutbacks on federal and state funding that I can access for grants. Your vacancies on page 84. 85 is a couple of the areas that we also spoke about, the vehicular services, equipment repairs, car washes, everything from our uniforms to uniform cleaning, food services. Benefits, wages and salaries. Communications, materials, and supplies, 87. Weapons supplies, and again, remind everybody, when you see the ammunition, it just keeps climbing and climbing and climbing, unfortunately. I don't see that going down anytime soon. And there are the charts that almost anyone that's been to TAPS has seen, the 5-year comparisons, where we're at. In progress, quality of life calls down. Dispatch calls for service down. The officer-initiated calls for service, where an officer goes out there of his own volition and attempts to prevent crime or make an arrest, is up by 24.6%. Assaults are down, double digits. Robberies are down, double digits. homicide count is down 41%. However, I think if you back out the ones that are domestic related, because I haven't learned to predict that yet, that actually was actually significantly higher. Your drug on drug shooting homicides are down probably a heck of a lot closer to about 80%. Annual change in gun violence. Firearm seized is up by 10%. Burglary count down by 27%. There was a bump up in theft count, which I don't want to get too far in the weeds on it, but you have these traveling gangs now, one of them which is called the Felony Lane Gang, and they just come through, hit seven or eight parks, steal some checks, give the checks to some heroin heads, get them cashed, and they leave. We just went down to Virginia to lock a couple of them up, but I don't see us getting a ton of traction on them going to jail. So we were talking this morning about some options that we'll have with these roving. They're not from Delaware. We're just part of a circuit that they hit. They hit some health clubs in Hokesson. They checked for open lockers. So it's... They're not easy. They're here. They get what they're going to get, and they're out of the state. Vehicle theft count percentage change up by 3%. Our drug investigations, again, this is partially because we activated SIS. So instead of taking your undercover drug unit and using them for surveillance, the Special Investigations Unit handles the surveillance. And then you have your mobile enforcement teams out there. So we have a 64.2% increase in drug investigations. Cocaine seized is up by 35%. Heroin and opiates up by 269.7%. Marijuana is up by 232% increased seizures. Prescription drugs seized up by 31%. And this one's a little bit scary because if meth gets here, we've got a bigger problem, which is why we still have to continue to focus on the educational piece. But methamphetamine seized is up by 1,439%. We want to talk about EMTs and people getting assaulted. We're going to, meth comes to town, a lot more hands-on battles, a lot of gunplay, lots of bad stuff. Just the polar opposite of heroin. You know, heroin makes you a zombie, methamphetamine makes you a monster. Currency seized, $461,729, 172% increases. This next slide.
Yes. Going back to the currency seizure, and good and bad, you know, obviously a lot of drug money out on the street.
Yep.
Just disposition of those funds once they're seized, just to review that very briefly.
It depends. If it's federal, like if we're doing something with the DEA, and we take $100,000, we'll get a percentage of that. Usually close to 50 or 60% of that. If it's state, it'll have to go into Sally Eady, and then we'll petition for that money back through a quorum, a board in Dover, which is a agency where voting members are Dover, Wilmington County, and state.
Right.
So we get about 89% of that money back through Sally Eady and grant applications. That's how it works. But you can't just take it.
Right.
It has to go through. It has to be funneled through a process.
Okay. And
or I would just take it.
You have to work the emergency medical examiner's office.
There is a legal process that has to be followed to have it declared, you know, contraband money or something like that as well. Or
not only that, Councilman. Once you take the money, they come out and audit you to make sure that you spend it appropriately. There's quite a system involved. It's very involved.
It's difficult. Here's your ordinance working guy.
Your disorderly premise cases is the next slide. It's pretty significant because we always talk about there's got to be a better way to build a mousetrap. You're not going to arrest everybody, but when you go and knock on their door and say, here's how this works, you're now on our radar. You're going to be sanctioned. If you're not the owner of the home, the owner of the home is going to be sanctioned, and you just keep upping the ante until we take your house. And we've had cases where we've taken people's homes, and it sends a very, very clear message. We've had slumlords that have come in from New York, at first said they didn't care what we did. We started taking money out of their pockets. They put up fences, they put up lights, they put up, you know, putting in sidewalks. You just, this is the smart way to go.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Chief. There's actually another component to this I'd like us to be considering and moving into, and I've sent the request over to the county executive and the county attorney, and I think we ought to be looking at abatement. It's there, it's in the state, they have it. I think it's something we should be looking at. I think the we have officers interested in that are working in it, and I'm very excited to let's pursue that venue, but the county executive has it right now in the law department, so I'm hoping that's something we'll get back to you all and something we can engage and look at as we move forward.
Abatement's going to be a very important tool in the future, and technically it has been in the past. We've met with the abatement unit in the Attorney General's office, and as a matter of fact, myself and the director just met with them the other day in regards to Silver Springs, because, you know, here's an area where we continue to go back to the mm-hmm. same place. You know, we already took a huge heroin ring out of there, and now we're taking another one. That's a problem. So abatement is part of the future. So.
Yep, gives us another venue, another step, and it gets us out, like you said, from, you know, you're fining, but we need to be able to move a little.
Yeah, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
Councilman Perdue.
It's a very creative piece of legislation Councilman Taggart putting on the table. We all voted for that. And I'm glad to see, you know, this massive rate of increase in its use. And I guess this, the only concern I have is, has it withstood a legal challenge? Have we ever had, you know, a court challenge on that ordinance itself?
I know that there's been challenges from several of these property owners.
Right.
You don't usually see a homeowner, though. You see them comply pretty quickly. But some of these guys that own 40 and 50 units and they live in New York or they live... Yeah, they'll get some lawyers going back and forth. But off the top of my head, I think we've almost trounced every one of them.
Bailed every
partial. But we had an attorney assigned to the police headquarters. It was a heck of a lot cleaner and a lot easier. And we need to get back to that. That's something that's in the works. But when you have a counselor in the building, like we did when Harshal was here, that was very effective. Mm-hmm. Total criminal events counts percentage change to the next chart. It's double digits down. That brings us to the crossing guards. I do have Lieutenant Dominic Gregory here with me in case we get into the weeds on the crossing guards. It falls under my budget, but really I don't have a ton of oversight, with the exception of relying on the two lieutenants that are down there to run the shop. What's happening throughout the county is schools are requesting less and less guards. There are schools that are even closing up and don't want any guards at all. And there's been some questions, you know, as to if we're making money off of that from their union president, and it's just not happening. So,
well, I believe that is that Councilwoman Kilpatrick is looking into that, and there's to be something at a public safety meeting in the future, if I'm correct. So that topic, that issue, will be at a public safety meeting in the future.
Great.
But I will tell you up top, the city is going through the same thing, because I see at my grandson's school where for 8 years, I'm sorry, no, he's not that old, for 4 years anyway, there were two specific crossing guards, and then for half a year it went to one, and now there's one full-time and then one that shows up occasionally depending on what's going on. So the city is seeing that same flex.
Well, again, just as a point of information, we send out a letter to the districts. They tell us how many guards that they want. That's how that works. And there's an argument that, you know, we're telling the districts. Dominic, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yes, hello. Dominic Gregory, one of the supervisors with the Newcastle County Crossing Guards. The letter that the colonel was referring to, I just provided him with a copy. We have districts from Votech to Brandywine to Apoquinamic to Colonial to Christina Ray Clay. We send out every year for the upcoming year requesting if they need any additional guards. That is the chain letter we send out to all of them. Then they respond back. If they need it, we have a guard there. What you were referring to in the city of Wilmington is not happening with us. You said you had two. You see one full-time, one part. That's not happening with us. If there's a guard and if there's a need for it, we have a guard posted there. If they call, say, for 20 posts for one district, we may have 20, but we don't have always kids crossing at that 20 due to call. Sometimes if it's an elementary post, the elementary kids now have moved on to middle schools. Right. So now we may have a guard sitting at an elementary post for 2 hours a day with no guards, no kids. But what we'll do then, we'll take that guard and put them somewhere else in the district where we can use them. And then if that post becomes active, the kids start crossing, and then we grow that guard back. But we have decreased the amount of guards because there's been decrease in schools. In the last five years, we've lost a total of 32 schools, Catholic schools and public schools. I mean, excuse me, private schools. Money there, tuition is just not occurring. People can't afford it. We've lost Fatima last year. We've lost Pike Creek Christian last year. Appaquinimic High School Middle, we used to have a guard there. They've done away with that. District does that transportation. They don't see the need. But the reason for the guard numbers decreasing, it's not because we're not hiring the guards, just because schools. We've lost schools. We've lost a great deal of schools. And it's going to continue.
As I've I've explained on several occasions to the president of the union, we have no benefit in, we don't benefit from reducing guards. That has nothing to do with my budget, but that is partially his accusations.
So. From what I see when I ride through the city of Newark, the colleges ought to get some. teach a course on how to cross the freaking street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yep, Chief or Dominic.
Yes.
You referenced the union, and we have seen some emails from them. Now, you are referencing the decrease in the amount of schools, so therefore decreasing the amount of coverage, but I guess perhaps the email was kind of drifting in a direction to say, although we have a decreased amount of schools and guards, so how is that? Is there any comment on that one? Or?
Ed, the question is that, you know, if there's a decrease in guards, is there an increase in crossing guard tax?
Sure, well, Ed Maliki, it depends. I mean,
how's that?
A couple things. The guards do get benefits. They get pension, they get workers' comp.
It's like
we just had a case a couple years ago, or currently we're in a guard on workers' comp. Those costs get charged to the crossing guards fund. Any additional costs, whether it be for uniforms or whatever they wear, those costs keep on going up too. And they're on a pay scale, so they do move up the pay scale. You know?
Ed, will you please clarify if this $3,071,000 that I get, none of this money?
This is a separate, it has nothing to do with police office. It is a separate fund. It's audited as part of the annual audit. It's a separate fund, separated from the general fund of the county. It is all that is part of the annual financial statements. We call that fund up separately. And as the Colonel said, does not get involved with the public safety budget, police budget at all.
And I never want the crossing guards reduced or not at their post, because we will revert back to the way it was years ago, which is they would literally call a police officer off the road to go and direct traffic or cross kids. And we don't want to, we're not interested, unless we are going to go down to Newark and do it down there, sir, at the college. And when we'd rather just be on patrol than directing traffic. I have no interest or rhyme or reason to reducing the amount of crossing guards.
Charter school at 273, just shy of 141, I think, next to the public school. They will use, I've seen them use a teacher.
There's the letter telling them, just tell us how many guards you will give them to you.
I've seen them, you have them out there. Rather than
you're sending terror. Is the crossing guard tax elastic every year, or is it set and it's maintained? Because there seems to be a little bit of an argument. I mean, we were kind of dabbling around it here, and the chief maybe alluded to it. But is the amount of monies in the crossing guard fund seem to be growing as relation to what we're using for?
It's recomputed every year, the tax rate. I mean,
okay.
It's based on your assessment.
And we said that in the budget?
Yeah, it's based on the, it's recomputed every year, and it's a separate rate for each school district. It's not the one uniform rate, depending on what goes into the school district. So, it's a separate line item on the tax bill.
So. Exactly, like a light tax.
Yeah,
or,
exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, we will have further discussion in public safety. And you're invited back for that discussion, Chief.
Thank you so much, sir. Greatly appreciate it. The FY 2014 approved budget was $2,910,000. The FY 2015 recommended, based on salary and wages, employee benefits, training, civic affairs, communication, utilities, materials, supply, contractual services, and the intergovernment cross charges, $3,071,628. The difference is $161,620 at 5.55% is the difference. You have an increase. This does help explain things in black and white as to where some of this is coming from. Increase due to merit increases on salaries and wages on the very first page, 113. An increase of 0.22%. The employee benefits, the training, civic affairs, communication utilities, materials and supplies, your uniforms and all that stuff. And of course, your increase in intergovernmental cross charges at 3.38%. Do you have questions on the crossing guards, or as the councilman or the chair has noted, we will be having a longer conversation about crossing guards.
Any members of the council?
Sir, I appreciate the time.
Anything from the public?
Yes, sir. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion to adjourn. Is a second.
All
in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All not voting? All goodbye. Thank you very much.